Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation. On the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name. The echo is haunting. The echo is always the same. I call your name. The echo is haunting. An echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
Hello and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Comlock Center, and they can be found on the web at comlock.com. That's K-A-M-L-A-K.com. Our guest tonight is Dr. Jim Tucker, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, how about diving right into the interview tonight? I know you've read all of Dr. Tucker's books, and you have plenty of questions for him.
Yeah, I think we'll dispel with our usual banter, and we have a terrific guest, so we'll get right into it. Jim Tucker is a medical doctor. He's the Bonner Lowry Professor of Psychiatry and Neurobehavioral Sciences at the University of Virginia. He's director of the University of Virginia's Division of Perceptual Studies, where he is continuing the work of Dr. Ian Stevenson with children who report memories of previous lives. Jim is a board-certified child psychiatrist to work with Dr. Stevenson for several years before taking over the research upon Dr. Stevenson's retirement in 2002. Dr. Tucker has published two books on the subject, Return to Life and Life Before Life, both recommended, and has numerous papers published in scientific journals. He's spoken before scientific and general audiences. He's made a number of television appearances, including Good Morning America, Larry King Live, CBS Sunday Morning, etc. We're proud that he's on Forever Family Foundation's Scientific Advisory Board, and you can learn more on Jim's website, including his books, jimbtucker.com. Welcome back to Signs of Life. It's a pleasure to have you, Jim.
Well, it's a pleasure to be back.
Yeah. So I guess a good place to start, so the other day Fran and I were working on an outline for a talk that we were giving about evidence suggesting life after life, and we started to categorize the evidence. So we put a category for direct personal evidence like near-death experiences or OBEs or deathbed visions or after-death communications, and then we made a category for assisted phenomena, like involving a third party, such as mediumship. And then we got to reincarnation, and we realized we need a new category. I mean, you know, it doesn't fit into either category. So I guess the question is, do you agree with that, or are they all related? Is there some sort of unifying principle that's responsible for all of the things that you study at the Division of Perceptual Studies?
Well, there's certainly the unifying principle in that all of these phenomena address the question of survival after death, or at least the mind existing and functioning separate from the brain. So in our cases of these children, when they have or seem to have memories from a past life, certainly the implication is that the person who lived before has survived death and then has come back as the child. So that's sort of the next chapter or a couple of chapters ahead of, say, a near-death experience where, you know, the person is at the point of death and beyond, but then comes back. Well, in this case, they don't come back to that life, but then perhaps continue on and start another one.
Mm. So in your research, I know a lot of people might ask, well, why do you study past life memories of children? Why not adults? So why is the research always with children?
Yeah. Well, there are a couple of reasons. One is because that's mostly who has these memories. And what we focus on are spontaneous memories. This work does not involve hypnotic regression, but just these kids that spontaneously start saying that they had lived before and usually describing how they died before. Occasionally, we will hear from adults who have had memories like that pop up later in life. It's certainly not near as common as with the children. But the good thing about when the children do it is you know that they have had limited access to information. So when a three-year-old starts talking about a past life from 50 years before, you know he didn't read about it in a book somewhere. Right. As opposed to adults who, you know, at times memory can be an amazing thing. And there are cases where people under hypnosis have recalled a past life. And then when they were hypnotized again, it turned out they were describing scenes from a book they had read years before and completely forgotten about the book. So it's called cryptamnesia, where there's this information they've gotten, but kind of forgotten about the whole, forgotten where it came from. But we don't really have that much of a worry in a 2 or 3 year old.
Yeah. So I take it then you're somewhat skeptical of the hypnotic regression, you know, because of the suggestive state that you're in. I mean, you don't get involved in that work at all, do you?
Well, that's right. And I mean, I should preface this by saying there are a few cases where people did display impressive knowledge from the past that would be unlikely for them to have known about. But the vast majority of cases, there's no real evidence to think that it was actually a past life. And the problem is that hypnosis is a very unreliable tool, even for memories in this life, where at times it can be amazing. So, for instance, someone recalls the license plate from a crime scene or something like that. But a lot of times the mind just fills in the blanks. And then after that, it's very hard for someone to know, okay, was that an actual memory or is that something my mind created while under hypnosis? So we tend to stay away from those cases. That's not to say that hypnotic regression can't be therapeutic at times, and certainly people like Brian Weiss have published plenty of cases that indicate that it can be therapeutic, but very few that show that it was an actual memory.
And these memories in children tend to fade at age around 5 and 6?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is, you know, curious in a way, but it's around the same time that all children lose their memories of early childhood. So the brain is undergoing a lot of changes at that time of life. And I mean, it sort of makes sense that as you get older, you can't be too focused on fantasy or a connection with the spirit world or whatever. I mean, from a biological evolutionary standpoint, you have to more and more make sure you're not, getting eaten by wild animals or something as our ancestors did. So there may be evolutionary reasons why we have an advantage not to be in touch with those kinds of memories, but more just focused on the here and now.
Yeah. Well, I think the experiences that children have are so evidential, not only in your work, but in the other work that's done. And if a child has a near-death experience, I mean, they don't filter it through the lens of their culture and their religion and so forth. And if a child sees an apparition, the child simply describes what it is. So children, as a group, offer tremendous research potential, right?
Well, that's right. And I mean, some of those childhood near-death experiences, I mean, the kids have completely startled their parents with what they told them that they experienced. And those can be some very touching cases.
Yeah. The argument that you get asked all the time is, you know, that skeptics will use against the theory of reincarnation is that it's an example of super psi, that the child is extracting information, you know, from a, like a data bank of information. The birthmark cases, though, seem to make a pretty good argument that this is not the case. So tell our listeners a bit about birthmark cases.
Yeah, so the person who started all this work, Ian Stevenson, who was my mentor, he was really interested in psychosomatic medicine, the connection between mind and body, even before he got into this work. So these cases with birthmarks really fascinated him. So it's once where kids are born with birthmarks or even full birth defects that match wounds, usually the fatal wounds on the body of the previous person. And Ian studied hundreds of these cases and you know, documented as closely as he could exactly both the birthmarks but also the wounds that the previous person experienced and then compared them. So when he could, he would be getting autopsy reports and eyewitness reports or whatever he could for the birthmarks. So you're right. As far as some sort of ESP super psi kind of phenomenon, how that would imprint on the developing fetus, you know, it'd be a real open question. I mean, I think there are other arguments against super psi as well. Partly, it certainly goes against the child's experience of these memories, which is the children very much identify as having been the previous person. It's from the point of view of this one previous person. And they also often have great emotion wrapped up with it. They are not just gaining information the way that a psychic or even a medium might, but more, it's much more than information. It's the full experience, including the emotions and the feelings of loss, sometimes the fears or phobias about how the previous death occurred. So it's really a complete experience beyond just knowledge through ESP.
We are talking with Dr. Jim Tucker, the author of Return to Life and Life Before Life. We're going to go to a quick break. We have a lot more to talk about, so stay with us.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perissetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook could be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the ForeverFamilyFoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest this evening is Dr. Jim Tucker. Our sponsor tonight is the Comlock Center, and they could be found on the web at comlock.com. Bob?
Jim, before the break, you touched on this, but has there ever been a near-death experience case where the experiencer comes back and talks about gaining knowledge about a previous life?
I think so. I mean, there have been ones where people have certainly come back with a sense of reincarnation and being shown past lives. Now, I'm not aware of any where they came back with veridical, evidentiary kind of details that were then investigated. But there are some where they get a sense of sort of the timelessness of existence and including multiple lives.
Mm. Do the children ever talk about, in-between lives? In addition to their past lives, do they describe what happened before they reincarnated?
Yeah, about 20% of them do, actually. And they'll kind of say different things. Some of them will talk about basically describing a near-death experience, how when they died, their spirit kind of floated up above, and then many of them will talk about, well, some of them will talk about staying near where the previous person died or staying near the previous person's family, occasionally giving details that it turns out were accurate, like describing the funeral that the family had for the previous person. And then some of them will talk about going to another realm, basically something like heaven. In fact, some of the American kids will use the word heaven. And then some will talk about coming back, either choosing their next parents or being guided to them. Some of them will talk about seeing their future parents, either during the pregnancy or sometimes just before the pregnancy, and sometimes giving details that frankly startle the parents. So there does seem to be this existence in between lives where the individuals are capable of having experiences and also capable of gaining knowledge.
Mm. You've written about a lot of compelling cases, but my favorite is Ryan and his previous life in Hollywood. I know that it's a long thing, but could you just briefly tell us a bit about that case? Because I love that case.
Yeah, sure. So Ryan is a little boy in Oklahoma who, when he was 4 years old, started saying on a daily basis to his mother that he wanted to go home to Hollywood, and he would cry and beg her to take him home to Hollywood. And to try to help him sort of process this, she went one day to the public library and got some books out about Hollywood. And they were looking through one of them when they came to a picture from an old movie called Night After Night, and Ryan pointed to the picture of one of the guys in it and said, "Hey, Mama, that's George. We did a picture together." And then pointed to another one and said, "And hey, Mama, that's me. I found me." Well, the first person he pointed to was George Raft, who was a well-known movie star back in the day, a long time ago. But the one that he said he had been was actually an extra with no lines in the movie. So Ryan's mom wrote to me to see if I could help figure out who this guy was. So I visited the family. I talked with Ryan and his parents. And then as we were trying to figure out who this guy was, Ryan's mom was emailing me sometimes on a daily basis with all of the statements that Ryan was making about his past life and was describing quite a life that, frankly, I thought was unlikely for an extra in a movie. Eventually, with the help of a Hollywood archivist, we were able to figure out who this guy was. This archivist went to the library of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, and she got all the materials for this movie, Night After Night, most of which was about the stars. But she eventually found this one picture of this guy, and it gave his name as Marty Martin. And it turned out that Marty Martin had led quite a life, as Ryan had described. So Ryan said how he had danced on stage in New York, and Marty Martin danced on Broadway. Ryan said that he then went to Hollywood and worked in the movies, which Marty Martin did, mostly working on dance in the movies. Ryan said that he then worked at an agency, and Marty Martin started a successful talent agency. Ryan said how he saw the world from big boats and talked about going to Paris, which Marty Martin did. Ryan also said that he had a big house with a swimming pool, and that the street address had the word rock or mount in it, and Marty Martin's big house with a swimming pool was on North Roxbury. He also said one time that he didn't know why God would let you get to 61 and then make you come back again as a baby. And Marty Martin's death certificate said that he was 59 when he died. He died in 1964, so it was a long time ago. But it turned out, I talked with Marty Martin's daughter and her and his stepson. They both said that Martin was in fact 61 when he died. I then found census records and marriage listings and passenger lists that all gave ages that it meant that, in fact, Marty Martin was 61 when he died and not 59. So even though the death certificate said 59, Ryan was correct when he said 61. And when I met with Marty Martin's daughter, there was a lot that she didn't know about his life because she was only 8 when he died. But between talking with her and the records we were able to find, we eventually confirmed that 55 of Ryan's statements we were able to verify matched Marty Martin's life.
So when you, I mean, bearing in mind that you're a scientist and that you're a medical doctor, when you come across an extraordinary case like that, do you just want to scream and high-five people? Is that like a home run?
Well, we haven't broken out in a victory dance yet, but I mean, there are cases like Ryan's where I'm content with saying that the best explanation is that he's remembering a past life. That you know, there's not an easy ordinary explanation that will explain the case away.
Hmm. What about, I don't know whether it's in the spiritual community, you hear people say a lot that we choose our parents and we choose the family that we come back with. Is there any evidence to back that up, that we might pick our parents when we decide to return to the physical world?
Well, some of the kids, when they talk about events between lives, will say that they chose their parents. But a lot of them seem absolutely miserable in the families that they're in. So, you know, if they did choose their parents, I guess they changed their minds once they got born. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, none of us really knows. But it's comforting to think that we've all sort of planned this ahead of time and we've made our contracts or agreements with spirit or whatever, and that there's a purpose to all of this. I'm not completely convinced of that. And I also think it's possible that some individuals have more control over where they are reborn than others. That just as some people have more control over their thoughts through meditation or whatever it may be, you know, I think it's possible to be better prepared to have control even between lives and choosing the next life.
Yeah, and the question always comes up, and I used to ask the same thing. I mean, why would somebody choose to return to live a life of hardship or poverty or illness? You know, I mean, it mm-hmm. think in physical terms, it just, you know, makes no sense at all. But I guess the only way you can reason that out is karma or fulfilling a some sort of a learning experience to fulfill your soul. I don't know. I mean, obviously it's not a research question, but what are your thoughts on that? I mean, why
you sort of hope so. I mean, yes. Why would somebody choose such a hard life? On the other hand, you know, I wonder why would anyone ever choose to run a marathon? Or it's not something I would ever choose to put myself through. You know, 26.2 miles of suffering, but there are people who get a lot out of it and feel like they grow through the experience. So it's at least conceivable that these hard lives do serve a purpose and that people choose to go through it as a growth experience.
Mm.
Now, if you look at the truly horrible lives, you know, I mean, that argument may work logically, but it doesn't necessarily work emotionally when you see some of the terrible suffering that people go through.
Yeah. One of the common things that comes up is when we get into a discussion of reincarnation, a lot of people, especially bereaved parents, they tend to kind of dismiss the possibility because I think out of fear. And then when you talk to them about it, they say, well, I fear that, you know, if my child were to reincarnate, that means that I could never communicate with them, you know, so I wouldn't have any experiences, you know, so that they're hoping that their loved one, not necessarily a child, waits until they reincarnate.
Yeah.
I think that has the explanation may have more to do with the nature of time. So it may be possible for somebody to reincarnate, but their memories of a previous life still exist, so they could be several places at once, so to speak. What do you think?
I think so. I mean, I think this realm of consciousness presumably operates on very different rules than this one regarding time. And I also think that it's quite likely that we have sort of a higher self along with this self that we have in this life. So that, yes, it may be possible to be in two places at once, using the terms loosely using the terms two places and the term at once, both kind of loosely, but
yeah.
But you can have an existence in this other realm while there's also that you could visit your child in heaven even while at the same time that individual is having a life down here.
Mm. What about these children that are prodigies? Is there any evidence suggesting that in some of these cases their gifts or talents can be attributed to a past life that's remembered?
Well, certainly we don't have a good explanation for prodigies. I mean, there's some with what seem like almost superhuman talents that, you know, very young children display. But none that I'm aware of have actually said they had memories of a past life. Now, I did, at one of my cases, the child remembered being Bobby Jones, who was a famous golfer back, well, close to 100 years ago now. And he was close to a golf prodigy. I mean, by the time he was three, he was showing a lot of talent. And even as a child, he won dozens and dozens of golf tournaments. So, you know, not that he's necessarily Tiger Woods, but he had unusual ability, that's for sure. So there are other cases, not necessarily that the children are prodigies, but there are other ones where the families report that they learned particular skills more easily than their peers did. So there may well be some carryover of abilities that, again, is not just memories, but there is more of the full spectrum of things that can carry over. I wouldn't dispute the possibility that childhood prodigies, at least some of them, that there is a link to past life, even though they don't have any conscious memories of it.
So in all of the cases, and yours and Ian Stevenson, when children talk about past life memories, is the assumption that, do they ever report multiple memories from multiple lives, or when they incarnate, does that sort of get erased from their memory of maybe a life before that and a life before that? So I guess the question is, do children report multiple past lives?
Well, a few of them do. Most don't, but a few do, and usually with one of the lives in much greater detail than another, which I guess makes sense. And usually it would be the most recent, although sometimes you can't really tell if it was the most recent or not. But it's unusual enough, of course, that you would have memories of any past lives, more than one. But there are at least a few of those cases.
Yeah. How about déjà vu? Any connection between déjà vu and a past life?
Well, it's certainly something that people have wondered about. I think it depends to some extent what you mean by déjà vu. And there are where people will experience, they walk into a place they've never been to before, and they feel like they've seen it before and can even give accurate details. And as you're counting that, then, all right, you've really got to wonder about past lives. But a lot of people also have the sense that they had this conversation before, or that they've seen this thing before, but they can't quite put their finger on it, but it just feels like they've experienced it before. And if that's what you mean by déjà vu, I would think some sort of neurological explanation would probably be the most likely, even though, as far as I know, there's not really a neurological mechanism that's been identified.
I recall from reading your books and our past conversations that you had a theory that we may all be part of a shared dream. Am I remembering that?
Well, yeah, and it's a little challenging sometimes for me to succinctly explain what the heck I'm talking about. But the
me too.
A lot of people about anything really, but as far as this goes, a lot of people in quantum physics, including Max Planck, the founder of quantum theory, said that they viewed consciousness as being fundamental, and that matter was derived from consciousness, that ultimately at the core, reality grows out of consciousness. And in that sense, it's like a shared dream in which all of existence and all events are growing out of our consciousness, just as our nighttime dreams grow out of our consciousness. And if that's the case, and I think it is, then there's no reason to think that when the physical brain dies, that the consciousness that's associated with it would end. It seems to me if consciousness is fundamental, then it remains fundamental, and regardless of what happens to the physical aspect that it may be connected to.
There's a lot of people that refer to this physical existence as the dream world and everything else as the real world. So that makes
Yeah, and you know, like the movie The Matrix, which you know, that may not have been so far off as far as its view of reality.
We're talking with Dr. Jim Tucker, author of Return to Life and Life Before Life. We have more to talk about with Dr. Tucker, but we're going to squeeze in a quick break, so stay with us. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
The Camlack Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one. Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love Knows No Death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, we have been talking to Dr. Jim Tucker. Our sponsor tonight is the Camlack Center, and they can be found on the web at camlack.com. We want to remind our listeners to check the events page on our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, for all the latest events and happenings. And coming up free this coming month for our members, on June 4th, from 6:45 to 8:45 p.m. Eastern Time, We have the Cold Spring Harbor New York Afterlife Discussion Group that will meet at the Cold Spring Harbor Library and Environmental Center on June 8th from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, and at the same time, 11 to noon Pacific and every time in between. The Visionary Explorers Group meets online. And June 8th from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, the Brookline, Massachusetts Afterlife Discussion Group will meet at Spirit of Light in their downstairs meeting room. Our next webinar is scheduled for June 26th at 9 p.m. Eastern and will feature Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Janet Mayer, Joe Peretta, and Joseph Scheel, hosted by Kimberly Saavedra. They will discuss the attributes that need to be present when selecting a medium, and they will field questions from the attendees live during the webinar. It starts at 9 p.m. Eastern. Please calculate the times for wherever you are in the world. And we have a limited number of free member-only seats for our listeners if you use the code MEDIUMS2019. And for our non-member listeners, please use the code HOWTO2019 for half-price seats. The annual summer grief retreat, Love Knows No Death, is open for enrollment. Be sure to grab one of the remaining seats to this great weekend where attendees work in small groups with certified mediums Rebecca Ann LoCicero, Siri Bernstein, and Joseph Scheel, along with Dr. Mo Hanna and a caring staff of facilitators assisting in transforming your grief. The special weekend is scheduled for July 26th through 28th in Chester, Connecticut, where you will learn that the mystery of death is not a mystery at all, but a doorway to another chapter of continuing life. It is easy to get to by train, plane, or automobile. And please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, and great nonprofits. And follow us on our YouTube channel for great stories and videos at youtube.com/afterlifeeducation. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Dr. Jim Tucker. You know, Jim, a lot of people, I guess half jokingly, when you talk about reincarnation, they say, well, why would I want to do that? You know, why I don't, you know, when I'm done, I'm done. I'm, you know, I don't want to come back. So it got me thinking, if we were to take a survey that assumes that reincarnation is real, I wonder if more people would say they find that thought comforting or discomforting. What do you think the majority would say?
Well, I think they would choose it over non-existence. But it's, you know, even with tradition like the Buddhist tradition, with the idea, sort of the ultimate goal is to get off of the wheel of life where you stop having lives.
Right.
I think it depends to some extent, like we were talking earlier, how much control you have over the process. And, you know, some lives seem like they'd be pretty sweet to experience, and then others much less so. But,
well, you're making it.
I mean, obviously, the idea of heaven, you know, is sort of more appealing than going through trials and tribulations down here, but this certainly beats nothing.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I mean, faced with extinction forever or living a life that maybe is not so hot, people choose living a life that's not so hot,
yeah.
I guess. In all these cases that you investigate, is a child more likely to remember a past life if in their previous life there was a violent or sudden death than not?
Yes. So 70% of the kids remember a life that ended violently, or at least ended unnaturally, meaning murder, suicide, accident, that sort of thing. And, you know, if you think about in this life, if you think about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, that's an example of where traumatic memories that people wish they could get rid of continue to exist and continue to disturb them. And it almost seems like, oh, it does seem like, it works similarly across lives, that these traumatic memories continue on. And it may well be that then the other details of that life come with the traumatic memory. So if somebody just lives kind of an ordinary life, I mean, we have those cases, just sort of an ordinary life and death, dies of old age, but it's much more common either that the person died violently and or the person died young. So even in the natural death cases, a quarter of those, the person was under the age of 15 when they died. So there does seem to be something about, you know, you could call it unfinished business, but something about dying young or dying violently that makes it more likely that a child will then remember that life.
It makes sense to me, you know, the trauma aspect of it, because, you know, the evidence with a lot of psi phenomena is that very strong emotion, whether that be good or bad or love or hate or whatever, seems to enhance psi transmission, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So an experiment, so maybe it's related, you know, the emotion of going through a trauma gets transmitted more easily than not.
I think that's a good point. Yeah.
I remember looking at my notes from when we talked after you wrote the first book. I mean, I think you mentioned in that book that Ian Stevenson once said that he would die a failure because he had not achieved his goal of getting mainstream science as a whole to consider reincarnation as a possibility. What do you think of, are we making progress?
Again, I should add, he did say that with a smile, but that's a good question. Are we making progress? If you look at polling, it shows that 20 to 25% of Americans believe in reincarnation. But that number has held pretty steady over the decade. So I certainly the work that we're doing here has not caused a sea change in the general population as far as how they view reincarnation. But there are certainly, I think, more interest in it than there was, say, 50 years ago, when, you know, the ideas of any Eastern religion, such as Buddhism, was completely foreign to people. Well, maybe more than 50 years ago, but 60 or 70 years ago. So they're certainly more interested in it, and you know, polling doesn't pick up everything. I mean, I think probably in general, people are more at least open to the idea that they might have been in previous generations.
Yeah. So, you know, just people are probably curious from a research perspective. I mean, how you come upon these cases? I mean, somebody has a child that starts talking about past life memories. They're somewhat intrigued by it. They probably don't know anything about it, so they Google, and find you. I mean, after all, there aren't very many credible researchers doing this kind of work. And then you get an email or a phone call. Is that typically the way it starts?
Yep, that's pretty much it.
Okay.
You can imagine back a few decades ago how much harder it was for Ian because he mostly studied cases in places that with a belief in reincarnation, because that's where he could find the cases, because there people talk about them. Whereas here, families tend to be embarrassed about them. And, if there was something that was published about his work, then he would get letters from people. But often, after the child had long grown up, but now, like you said, what you described is exactly right. The child will be talking about a past life. They'll do some searching online and they'll learn about us and they'll email us. So we hear from parents all the time now. What we're mostly interested in is cases where we can look, can the child's statements be verified to actually describe a life from the past. So we hear from parents a lot of times, unfortunately, if the kids don't give the right details, then the lives can't be verified. But for ones where they do, then go and explore and study the cases. Occasionally we'll hear about ones through other ways, like from television or whatever, but mostly it's just people emailing us.
Yeah. So you'd probably make a good fit in the CSI or FBI. I mean, because essentially what you do is you become an investigator, right? Digging up clues.
Well, that's right. And with the same, I hope, sort of level of scrutiny and I mean, the goal is to get it right. So, you know, if there's a detail, if I'm going to count that as a positive statement, I want to make sure that it's accurate. So, yeah, we try to be quite serious-minded as we approach all these cases.
Yeah. I don't know if I ever asked you, but so when you started out, I mean, you had a clinical practice, you know, I guess you were somewhat happy in your work. I mean, so what intrigued you about, you know, past life memories or reincarnation?
Yeah. I mean, well, it was more the question of life after death, actually, more generally. And I mean, it's a bit of a long story, but when my wife and I got together, you're right, I was just in private practice doing child psychiatry. But when my wife and I got together, she was interested in things like reincarnation and psychics and so forth, which kind of got me curious. And also, I mean, just being with her kind of opened me up to looking at everything again. And I was living in Charlottesville, where the university is. So then we learned that they were starting a new study on near-death experiences. So I just called up to see if they needed help with that study. And kind of one thing led to another. I mean, the way I ended up in the past life work was that Ian was approaching 80. And, you know, there was no one else here to carry on that work. I mean, well, there are other people here, but it's people like Bruce Grayson, who's focused very much on near-death experiences. So it was partially being in the right place at the right time. And it's, you know, I feel very fortunate to be able to do this work.
And you ever wonder how your life would be different if you still had your clinical practice and never got into this? I mean, your life would be completely different, probably.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I did that long enough to know that I like this better.
Right.
I mean, there, you know, it was great that I was able to help a lot of people, but there's also a real grind to private practice, and this I still see patients. In fact, I spent the afternoon seeing patients at the clinic, but I also like the variety of sort of looking at the big questions like life after death, along with helping individual patients with the things they're dealing with.
And we have been talking with Dr. Jim Tucker. If you're interested in the possibility of life after death and of reincarnation, this is the person that you want to learn more about. The two books are excellent, Return to Life and Life Before Life. There are Amazon links to those books and the emails that you all got. And the website, again, is jimbtucker.com. Jim, thanks so much for being with us again. It's always a pleasure, and hope to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, it's great talking to you. So, yes, I'd be happy to come back.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Happy to come back. Is that a research joke?
Yes, it could be, yes.
Okay. All right, take care. Have a good evening.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our global peace prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.